Welcome to Starfield Universe On Call. I am Paul Franz, owner of Franz Games. I run the SFB Online, FedCom Online, and Starfleet Warlord. Just a reminder, join us for the top guest every Thursday night starting at 9:30 p.m. Eastern Time. You can either call on the phone, so dial 605-562-0444. Just follow the directions. The call ID is 17702. Or you can participate on the web. Just go to the Talk's website at www.talkshoe.com and search for call ID 17702. 17702. I'm having a slow night. And, of course, if you want the actual best online experience, I'd say go to twitch.tv. Yes, twitch.tv/SFUOnCall. And you'll find us there. You'll find the wonderful chat room. You'll chat away with other people. And, of course, you'll be able to listen and even watch me on video. Because it's Twitch. It's video. Wow. And, of course, if you need to contact me for any reason, my email address is sfuoncall@gmail.com. It's sfuoncall@gmail.com. Also, if you want to follow me on Twitter, you can, or X or whatever they've called it this week, you can follow me on sfuoncall or Paul Franz. That's P-A-U-F-R-A-N-Z. There's no T in that. And Franz Games, F-R-A-N-Z-G-M-E-S, which is the business account for that. And of course, this lovely TalkCast gets turned to a podcast available on iTunes and various other feeds around the net. And of course, it also gets posted up on YouTube for those of you who actually want to watch the video. Some quick news from ADB this week. Steve Patrick is still hardly working, I'm not sure which, on Orion Master Starship book. Steve Cole has been busy working resolving issues with some skin cancer. So keep in your thoughts and your prayers. And on this week, in Found, on the online store, there's two things that, well, there's the Klingon pin and the Romulan pin. Now, they're $5 each. And they're beautiful 1.5 collision. They're circular pins, showing either the Undying Allegiance to the Klingon Empire or the Romulan Empire, whichever one you wish. I picked this one because I thought that would be a really cool thing, especially something, a little stocking stuffer you may want to get for Christmas. Hey, remember to order early because you never know how long it's going to take to get things out these days with Christmas approaching. You know how that is. And, of course, Hanukkah for those of you who celebrate Hanukkah, which starts this evening on December 7th. Just happy Hanukkah for those people who celebrate Hanukkah, i.e. our Jewish brothers. Moving on forward to the SFB Online tournament, which is the Sapphire Star 15 tournament. Peter and Jeff have started the finals. They've gone through two turns. Still very close. They're planning on continuing it on Sunday, Sunday night, I think it's 5 o'clock Sunday night Eastern time, or 7 a.m. Japan time. So, 7 a.m. Monday Japan time, because it's across the international date line, and that's why it's the next day. So, crazy stuff. Nothing when it comes to the online clients, nothing actually. When it comes to Starfleet Warlord website, it's still there. It's still transitioned to the Nuke website. There were some minor glitches with the website. It was pointed out relatively quickly by some of the players where I was missed. One of the links was broken, and also actually two links were broken, and also you couldn't order more than one turn. So that was oopsies on all three of those. And I thank everybody who's been pointing out that some of the issues on it. Obviously, some of these issues were missed previously by me and by me. So I'm the major tester. But anyway, Moving on forward to the library report, there's been no updates when it comes to either the SFB or FedCom library for this week. So with that, that is the news for this week. And it's me, SM1 the Old Paul Friends, welcoming you to Star for the Universe On Call. And tonight, it's just me, and it's Doug, and if you hear that, you might hear a little echo from myself, because I forgot to turn down the volume on Twitch. Because, yes, we're actually broadcasting on Twitch. And anyone who's listening to this afterwards, yeah, you should already know that, because I announced it as part of the news section. And obviously, we have... This quick reminder, of course, is that we've got Christmas coming up very soon. At the moment, given that Christmas falls on the Monday? I think it falls on a Monday, if I recall correctly. That means also New Year's falls on a Monday. So there is no reason for me not to do a podcast all the way through the Christmas break. My day job, the one that actually pays me money so I can have this, you know, my house. I have a nice roof over my head. That's always a good thing. They close down between Christmas and New Year. So that's a nice thing to have, you know. I still find it minorly annoying, though these days not as much so. Previously, when I was, that seemed like be the only time I could actually get work done at work, at least not much more quickly, because of I wasn't having anyone going, Paul, can you help me this? Paul, can you help me with it? Yes. Excuse me. I have a minor technical issue. What is it? You are the bane of my existence. And yes.
Meow.
Here. Excuse me, kitty. Here. Go on the printer.
Use the claws, because they didn't use the claws.
There. For those watching, I have a printer that way, which he likes to lay on top of, which is fine. The HP inkjet, which actually it's one of those 3-in-1s, which actually is quite good, because every once in a while we need to do scanning, and that does a nice job. I never use the fax ability, but we use it for scanning and printing. Every once in a while you have to print something, believe it or not. In this day and age, we still have to use a printer. So we're not a 100% electronic society, and to be honest, I don't think that will ever occur. Unless there's some huge changes in technology, especially when it comes to signing, encrypting, and all the, signing things, as in, code signing, that kind of thing, where you can verify who actually signed it, and then signing documents, because currently our whole legal system is based off physical, writing your signature to agree, yes, this is me. That's part of at least the legal system in the United States. So you can do this signing online and you agree to it. Now the question is that really you? Which always becomes problematic. Like DocuSign, that kind of thing. But anyhow, I didn't know that, Dave, that certain nerds can notarize electronically. But Dave, don't get me started on notaries. Please don't get me started on notaries. Because I still remember I tried to get my will notarized by a public notary, and they would not touch it with a 10-foot pole. My guess is they didn't want to get their butts dragged into court if it ever within the court, you know, to verify, yes, this is the person who actually signed it, them. I'm not sure. At least that's my guess, because they wouldn't tell me why they wouldn't do it. They just said they wouldn't do it. Of course, I didn't, at that moment in time, I didn't.
You should just try a different one.
Yeah.
There was a interesting thing. If you remember the 6 to 9 years of legal issues I went through with the estate, that all stemmed out of the estate. Well, the whole thing with the fraudulent will that my sister threw up there was, I had a lawyer for like a few minutes, and we spoke with the notary whose stamp was used for that. And she swore up and down she did not stamp a will, but she stamped a limited power of attorney. That's all the paperwork that she was given. And the thing is, she went on to further explain in this conversation. Now, and bear in mind, her boss was on the line with her, and I was sitting with an attorney in their office at the time with Erica and, you know, the attorney. And she went on to further explain that she had a limitation from her job as a condition of her employment at the bank that my mother used. She was only allowed to do some documents that related to financial stuff, but not wills and not some other things. However, if she had gone to a person who has an office that does this all day long, some of them will like keep a copy of what they've notarized in case they have to prove that this was the actual document that they signed.
Right.
It's entirely possible that, you know, for the few bucks that you were going to be giving them, this person just didn't want the potential of record keeping and hassle.
Yeah.
So it would probably behoove you then to just look up a lawyer's office that does wills and whatnot.
Well,
and just say, hey, you just need it certified and kept on record. You've already got it done. And it'll probably do it for a small fee.
Right. Well, basically, that's what we ended up doing, is we went back to the lawyer's office who made the will and had them notarize it.
There you go.
But the thing is, by the time we're living in Reading, and our lawyer is down in Westchester. So, you know, it was a hassle. That's the only reason we wanted to do it, you know, immediately.
Hey, at least you have a lawyer for it.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, I mean,
mine bailed. Right, when the going got tough.
Yeah, but anyway.
But that's a whole other story.
Yeah.
Outside of the scope of this podcast.
Yeah, definitely. Both these things are outside the realm of this podcast, and I think we should move on to bigger and better things than talk about legal issues. This is not this week. In lawyer talk.
Just remember, all listeners, the short version is Paul has a will. You should have a will too. Don't die intestate.
Agreed.
Thanks for everything.
Yeah, the thing is, we, because of Tad, my son is autistic. We, as part of that, actually, that's one thing. I think we have to update our will, because this is also when our daughters were also, you know, young. And we had assigned a guardian to them at that moment in time because they were so young. In case we died, we'd want to have them have a decent guardian. And there's these folks that we knew from down in Southern Maryland that we knew from when Theta was going to college down there. And they're great people. You know, we loved them. Haven't kept in contact with them, we should try to get a hold of them. It's been decades since we've talked to them. But you know, at this point, we set it up so that, but we already have executors to a trust, but I got a settlement, some legal settlement. because of the drugs they had him on. So he was part of a big class action lawsuit. It was a small amount, you know, but larger enough that if he actually took the lump sum, you know, that he'd be kicked off the rolls when it comes to the state and all that kind of fun stuff, which don't get me started on the welfare system and how it's unfair and totally idiotic. I understand to a certain degree why they do it, but at the same time, they don't really help people get out of their situation, you know. But anyhow, sorry, went down that rabbit hole. But tonight, actually, what I was thinking about doing is discussing something which, hello, Patient Zero, on YouTube once more, and that he. You know, we discussed a tiny bit, you know, a couple comments back and forth, which was, as I mentioned last week, which is that he really felt like tournament cruisers really are not a really good way of representing what SFB is. And, you know, it should be more of fleets. And I did mention, of course, that we kind of already have that in FedCom. But the one thing that I was wondering, given, you know, limited time, because that's the one thing about FedCom, even FedCom has a limited time of 3 hours. Could we do the same thing with SFB that we did for FedCom? And that is, give people a BPV, say, okay, we're going to give you a, in the case of SFB, I do this, because FedCom, you don't have this. In FedCom, you don't have a year in service, really. In theory, you do, but you don't. At least in the tournament, we never had a set year in service saying, okay, you can't have any ships that are in year in service or after this year. Or, you know, after this year, because, you know, that's the way year in service works. With SFB, I can see it's actually having a certain year in service. Now, in the FedCom, we had a limited amount of points you could spend. Now, that I'm assuming an SFB that could work the same way. Now, but of course, the big thing with SFB versus FedCom has no electronic warfare per se. It's got certain things that you can do which are electronic warfare-ish. And I do say ish because of, you know, you have things like Iraq maneuvering, which of course produces in SFB, it actually produces EW, ECM. It makes it more difficult to actually hit a target. But, you know, in FedCom, you don't have things directly for using special channels and doing that. And even those are limited, usually limited to bases. So you can't play. There's one thing that was disallowed, big surprise, in FedCom tournaments, which is you can't use bases. Ah, shocker. Talk about the ultimate castling strategy, you know, though. Yeah, it's kind of, yeah. Well, actually, the thing is, that's the one thing, if you think about it, actually, with the whole idea of castling and FedCom don't quite work. Because why it works in SFB and doesn't quite work in FedCom is that in FedCom, you have a limited amount of energy you actually can reinforce to a shield. So it's not, and that's based on the number of batteries you have versus SFB, which says, okay, any extra power that you have that you aren't using for anything else, you can put that towards reinforcement. So that's why it's a big difference between the two. But anyhow, so definitely in SFB, you couldn't do that. Now, I think the big thing here is, of course, the number. If I recall correctly, for FedCom, it was like 500 points. Which I think is also doable. You can have Yeah. I'm just thinking it through. I think it might have been 500, maybe a little bit less. I forget the exact number. Yes.
What scale of tournament are you trying to do? Like individual ship or squadron of some kind?
A squadron of some kind. The idea being that you get to select the ships. Now, given that it's a squadron, I don't see an issue with command and control. You know, I don't think we have to worry about those rules at all. And I prefer to avoid them, especially in some, and this is small squadron.
Wasn't there like a squadron listed in like a lot of the old captain's logs? Mm-hmm. And they have like a thing, like a special section where they talk about here's X hundred note point squadron or Eastern such and such. I the only problem I really see with this is that it's the number of variables you have in the game.
Mm-hmm.
It would just be so potentially unbalanceable, basically. Whereas, and I hate to say this, the tournament here are not perfectly balanced by any.
Oh, definitely not.
Correct, but they're as balanced as they can be,
right?
In my opinion, or at least as close as they could potentially get it. Because even then, you still occasionally have somebody come along and say, "Oh, hey, look, here's strategy X with ship Y that makes them unbeatable against these bits of rock, and but against those papers instead." It's just, I think. For doing it on a squadron scale, I would say you probably want to do something more along the lines of, say, here's a set several ships, and if you're fighting against an opponent of type X, Y, or Z, here are some different options you can choose from on a DPD basis. If that makes sense. For instance, like when you look at the Fed ship in the general war setting, there were differences in loadouts for people fighting the Romulans, say, than necessarily people fighting the Klingons. And that would be because on one side you're dealing with a bunch of drones, and the other side you're dealing with plasma.
Mm-hmm.
But the core ships are the same.
Understood. But the thing is, I felt like, and this was after we stopped doing Origins. No longer was some place where we had tournaments. We had the FedCom Online tournaments, and we still had the same issue with FedCom, which is, of course, you have quite a few variables. Now, obviously, when it comes to rules, the rules are simplified, and therefore you don't have as many variables built into the system. But one thing that was done for that was the whole thing with multipliers, which was basically the idea of depending upon your empire that you selected, you actually would have a little bit more or a little bit less based on that empire, because of that was done as an experiment, and it was being tweaked as they kept on playing tournaments and going, you know, this needs to be tweaked a little more this way or that way. The idea being that given a tournament situation, the whole fishbowl effect, that certain ships do better than others. You know, for example, I would say that the plasma would do better, but of course, FedCom, that's because with or even seeking weapons in general, in tournament play, i.e., not wide open space where you have a floating map that seeking weapons are better off because your opponent only has a limited amount of place they can actually run. You know? Now, there's one thing I've never really looked into, which is the idea of a floating map in, you know, let's say a tournament situation, or even not even a tournament situation, a scenario situation. I think Aaron Staley did back in the day with the Void War campaign. And that was that at a certain point, if you exceeded a certain number of hexes, you know, basically you went further from the enemy than the map, a single map, then you were considered disengaged, and you know, considered that you disengaged and ran from the sector. In the case of strategic play, obviously that makes a lot of sense. When it comes to regular SFB play, then usually when it comes to that kind of maneuver with a floating map, you then have certain victory conditions. And of course, in the case of you're fighting against overwhelming odds and you flee at a certain point after you've reached a certain goal, that's still considered a success. But in the case of the idea of being too relatively, because we know, come on, we know for a fact that BPV is a very, very crude instrument to give relative strength, you know, both offensive and defensive potential for a ship. It's relative, so you can compare two ships relatively to each other, and possibly two fleets are relative to each other. Now, you know, that's really rough. You know, as I said, it's a very crude instrument for measuring that kind of thing. But
anything you replace it with is basically the same thing. You're still taking a measure of it.
Say again?
Pretty much, what are you going to replace it with? Because anything that you replace it with is still going to be kind of a measure of it.
Oh, agreed. Well, that's why I think the Fae Come Online tournaments, you know, the ones that are done online, that they came up with the tweak of having a multiplier so you could either go up or down, you know, based on the Empire because of that condition. Now, I think we all agree that even in the tournament play where you got the ships that are tried to be more closely aligned, you know, to one another, we still have the whole problem with RPS, you know, rock, paper, scissors.
Mm-hmm.
You know, for example, what's a good one? You know, a Saltonian versus a Tholian, that's a 50-50 shot overall. But if you have like the Fed against the King Eagle, you're going to give the Fed, given equally skilled opponents, you're going to give the Fed the better percentage chance of winning. They're probably 60, possibly 70, or maybe even higher than that.
Well, isn't it in the records? Don't they? Isn't there like that? I think we've gone over this ground before. Isn't there some kind of database of like wins and killings?
Yeah, we definitely have quite a few records of different playing against each other. Now, the tough part about that always is, as I said, usually the idea of a rock, paper, scissors chart was given equal opponents. And the problem is that when you don't usually have equal opponents. Now, they haven't tweaked, you know, usually you have that kind of thing and then you tweak it up and down. Like I said, with the FedCom Online terminal, where we actually had a multiplier, which was tweaked, you know, up and down. Now, and I think everyone would agree that when it comes to an Orion versus an Andromedan, then Andro has got like 10% chance of actually winning that fight, you know, especially if it's against a phaser boat. The Orion can outmaneuver the Andromedan and has a much better chance. Now, man, you want to talk about really bad odds. You take the old Andromedan ship, which they, where they completely nerfed it with and replaced the TR heavies with TR lights. And then you now you've got a real big issue because he's got no chance. He's got, you know, short of the Orion hitting three times and failing on that third time, he had no chance.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But anyway, yeah. The thing that I think Patient Zero, he was coming, the reason he brought it up because he didn't feel like that the tournament play really represents Starfleet battles and how the feel of Starfleet battles, it's very not boxed, limited, which is that's the whole idea, because of you have all those things that got removed in tournament play, like EW is for the most part gone. You still have minor EW, i.e. cloaking device and Wild Weasel. You can't do erratic maneuvering, and you can't, and the obviously the biggest issue with that kind of limited EW is that there's no way to fight against that EW. There's no way to create ECCM to go against it. Though going back at this point, it's really a long time ago. I was just thinking about it. I think Aaron Staley actually was part of this tournament because Aaron Staley did not like tournament play. The big thing he did not like was there was no EW. You know, which made it so that it was which was less of SFB like. So actually, I think we tried one tournament where we actually had EW. We allowed EW. it didn't go well.
No, it did not. I can see all the reasons why. It kind of reminds me of the Captain's Game campaign that I was a part of back in the 80s, and basically we were allowed to choose any of the ships in the game that were within the BPV range, and I took the Fed survey cruiser, and basically with a few points in, you know, discretionary stuff and the EW that it had, nobody could kill it. Literally. It stomped the game. I can see why anything dealing with that in a six-hole tournament is going to be even more magnified. I think if you really want to have a representation of what SFC is all about, it's kind of like some of the online games I play. It's a multi-layered wedding cake, you know, onion to peel, so to speak, because there's so many different ways to play it. You can play out a campaign that's listed in the thing in a particular scenario, you know, whether it's straight out of a rule book or a book of scenarios or a captain's log. and you get the feel for the situation in that universe at that point in time that the opposing forces need to work through. Whereas tournament play, it's just you, me, in a fishbowl, and one of us is going to die. You know? And it's kind of oddly the antithesis of how the rest of the game is set up to be played, unless your players are literally just bloody-minded fanatics that only see utterly killing and crushing each other as the way to play any particular war game like that. Because if you don't have that particular mental mindset and you use the actual victory conditions or the victory conditions of a particular scenario, then it's a much different, much more subtle kind of game. So, at which point, yeah, hands down, the tournament play is not truly representative of the overall game. But on the other hand, it's also one of those spots where you get to go meet people. You know, it's like you talking about trying to get different events listed for the gamers thing, because, you know, what does it take to get people to come out of the woodwork to play? And it's not always everybody's cup of tea. Mm-hmm. SFB is, and I have to remind some people, Paul, on occasion, Barry, on occasion, that the SFE community within the gaming and tabletop community, it's a niche within a niche within a niche.
True.
You know, back when they had hundreds of people at Origin, that's still just a tiny, 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 tiny fraction of the people that go to that particular convention. And, but when you're talking to the people who care about the thing, to them, it's like maybe they don't quite see why other people don't see it as their central thing. You know, but, and maybe not, they don't get why people walk away from it when they've given it a try. Because it's not everybody's thing to stick with. So, but yeah, I don't know about a tournament one, because with a squadron size tournament, the only thing I could say there would be maybe if you chose a very specific format with variables that are based on who the opponents are,
right,
and not necessarily a design your own fleet thing. Because again, one of the things with tournaments is that you generally see standardization. So I'm not going to go into Game X's tournament with my homebrew rules. I'm going to go into that tournament with the official tournament rules for the company that runs the game. You know.
Understood. Okay, couple things real quick. Number one, obviously, the thing is with the whole idea of having different, basically fixed setups, I think is kind of, that's why I think people like the idea of the FedCom tournament, which is they got to choose their ships. And to me, it's like choosing your own ship in tournament play, you know, for regular tournament plays, which is, You got a feel for that ship. And in the case of a squadron, you have an idea or have a feeling, or at least got an idea of how these ships can work together. And obviously, after playing some, you can see how they all work together, you know, with the different weapon systems and so forth for each ship, and how they can actually help as a squadron to work together to do things which a single ship couldn't do. I don't see people being interested in something the way you'd have to select a certain setup for each matchup. You can just say, this is the Empire I'm going to be flying, and then you have to do that. Number two, when it comes to that electronic warfare tournament, I looked it up real quick, and it was the year 2004 was when it was run. So it was 19 years ago, folks. So, yes, I knew it was a long time ago, and I finally found out how long ago it was. And we definitely did some certain things which were smart, which was, okay, we said, okay, Orion doesn't get the stealth bonus. We allowed the Hydran, they could loan EW to its fighters. Of course, powered EW and so forth. There was a number of rules. I closed up the document that had the rules. The funny part to me is I was looking at this, and one of the people was playing is Paul Scott. And Paul Scott was playing the Orion, even though the Orion does not get the stealth bonus. Now, of course, what's the good thing about the Orion? The Orion has all that power, so he can max out his EW channels all the time. And it really doesn't cost him anything except for, losing point of power. So, and obviously, you can't do. It's something I have to. It's been so long since I've done EW, which is, are you limited to the number amount of power you can put towards a system when it comes to EW, based on your sensor rating? I understand that you can only do that when it comes to sensor rating. That's not all you can do when it comes to transmitting or have active EW for, whether it's ECM or ECCM. It's maxed out by your sensor rating, except for scouts. And then, of course, with scouts, you have the special sensors, which can do EW stuff also. And then you can loan and so forth, both ECM and ECCM. But the reason I ask is because, in theory, if you could actually allocate 6 points of ECCM and 6 points of ECCM, ECM and ECM, so you can use 12 points of energy, but just say, okay, I'm only using 6 points for each one of those systems. But I wasn't sure if you were limited and say, no, that's illegal. because otherwise you'd have to use batteries. And even with the Orion only has 4 batteries, so it'd be limited when it comes to EW changes. So this was a figure I'd mention that real quick. Big surprise. Actually, this was minorly annoying, to say the very least. I was on Reddit and someone said, well, the interface is clunky when it comes to SWB Online. I went, okay. I told him, that's the best, why don't you like it? Because it's clunky. Okay. That's not 100% useful. I understand the feeling, but of course, here's the gotcha. Use a program, no matter how clunky it might seem when you first use it. After you use it, after a certain number of weeks, months, years, you no longer see it. You no longer see the clunkiness. You don't see the issues anymore. And that, my friend, is why many, many years ago, this is like, the 19 years ago, that's probably about how long ago it was, possibly 20 at this point, possibly longer. Oh, that long, that old? Possibly. But back in the day, Paul Scott actually gave me really good suggestions on, okay, change this, change that. You know, this is really doesn't work. You know, can you trim this down to blah, 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 blah. And he gave me real suggestions on how to improve the interface. Because it was, you know what, if people think it's clunky now, you should have saw it when I first produced it. When I first created, well, first took the code and I added to it. And basically, it could do everything that it needed to do. It just was very, you know, poor user, poor UX, you know. And realized that I'm mostly a back-end developer, so. Back-end developer doing UI, yeah, that's what you get. I definitely feel like it has improved over the years. I definitely need to improve it some more. But, you know, I understand that the feel might be clunky to you, but the thing is, after some point, I no longer see it. And that's why, in my mind, and I'm sure if you listen to this podcast, you've heard me say this multiple times. Mm. And that is that I treat the new user's experience and what details I can get out of that user. Oh, okay, this is what's wrong. This is what, you know, this was my expectations. This is what happened. And so forth. Those are gold. Those are gold nuggets on helping me to improve the client, because you got fresh eyes. I have very old eyes at this moment in time. And realize I don't play that many other games. I don't usually have time to play other games. You know, it's not just SFB Online and Starfleet Warlord, but then I've got other activities I'm involved with. You know, I've mentioned multiple times to multiple people, which is the whole issue with people from working from home. And that is, when you take people that have worked in the office, now you take them out of the office, say, okay, now you got to work from home. Now, what happens when those people work from home? When they're forced to do that, forced to change the way they work, they're going to reset what their schedule is. Okay, now that I no longer have to drive home, when I do grocery shopping, I might have previously stopped by the grocery store on the way home. So I picked up the groceries for dinner on that day. So what might you do now if you work from home? Well, you might go out during your lunch. You go out and pick up, you know, stop by the grocery store. But of course, that might mean going to a different grocery store, your local grocery store, instead of the grocery store which is near your work. You know, all these things, kind of things, will change. And the same things happen with me, because I worked on SAP Online. I mean, heavily for many, many, many years. And basically, I got burnt out on doing all those changes. And then I slacked off because of, you know, there's a point where you get tired of working on the same project, you know, and focusing on that project. In which case, now, okay, I filled something else with that time, and that's what happened. So, anyhow, there is actually, I'll just bring it up real quick. There was an individual who actually sent me a suggestion, and I have to see if some of this already I know some of this already exists to a certain degree. Which is, and he mentioned it here, which is, okay, the person said, "Hi, Paul. Just prepping for my next battle, I thought I'd send a suggestion. And that's having the ability to copy and paste drone rack loadouts from rack 1 to rack 2 or 3 through 6. Basically, this is mainly for campaign games. And he said, would be nice. I'm filling out a Zindi fleet with 18 racks for the CBT, 6 for the DNL, and 4 for each of its MCCs and a DD, i.e., a destroyer, means 128 individual clicks in selecting drones before I go over and start filling out the nice storage section. So I can save a bit by using the fill rack function, because I do have the fill rack function, but copying and paste would be nice. So that's one thing I have to look into. I'm assuming he'd like to have it so it's like a spreadsheet, meaning that you can actually select, maybe select a bunch of them, copy that line or multiple cells, and then copy and then paste. So basically make it act like a spreadsheet, which actually I think would be, it's a great idea. And I need to find a way of doing that. Actually, depending upon, I have to look at this more, because in theory, I could, depending upon how he has these racks loaded up, because I'm wondering if he's loading these racks up the same way, because he's loading up all the racks the same way, then the whole idea of, the spreadsheet's fill down feature, you select either a cell and you select the whole column of cells below it, and then say fill down, and takes the value of the first cell and then fills the other cells below it, versus, don't mind me, oh there he is, yes, the Zinni is, I heard the Zinni making his cries. What? What is it? Yeah? No, you're not going to have the T word until later. I can't say the word because otherwise he'll get too excited. T-R-E-A-T. Yeah. What?
What is it? Hey, hello to everybody. Hello, everybody.
There. Can you just stay there for a while? Okay. Thank you. Yes, the locals, I think, showing up. Anyway. I definitely would like to do that and definitely get back to working on SWB Online. Who was it? Okay, actually, it was Patient Zero mentioned something, and I really would like to do this, and there's part of me which I'd like to get back to what I was doing before. And what I was doing before was, one thing I was working on is actually changing the back end. The reason I wanted to change the back end was because of two things. One, so the thing is, I'm sorry, I happen to be behind the times in certain technological updates. For example, this one, the whole idea of changing the back end is have it so that you don't have to have a good connection. The current protocol and the way you connect up to the game server, you have to have a constant, good, clean connection. Because if the connection, that connection between the two drops, for whatever reason, you get kicked off the system.
Okay.
But the back end I was thinking of is more of one where you can drop connections, and it's fine. It works more like a browser, where, okay, what the browser can do is it will go and send a request. And then when it's done, boom. Okay, if it drops the connection, who cares? You're still watching everything on your screen. But until you have to go interact with the server again, okay, then it puts out another request. And if that request fails also, you can do a resend and all that kind of thing. And currently, you know, the online client doesn't support that, but that was one thing I was wanting to do. But given that the connections these days have gotten better and better, you know, it might be a solution which has shown its age, i.e. it would have been great to have like 10 years ago. But at this point, it's kind of pointless. No.
Not necessarily.
Yeah, agreed. Okay, yeah, the one benefit of actually still doing it is the other thing which Patient Zero was mentioning and talking about, which was streaming of online games. And that was one thing that I have thought about multiple times, which is the whole idea of being able to not maybe necessarily play online games, but watch them using the website. Have it so, you know, and if I move the back end so it's more of request based, then then that the information would be more readily available on the back end, and definitely people could actually log into the rooms and be able to watch the game without actually downloading the client. Now they at this moment in time they still have to have the client to actually play online. But I think that would be a great benefit. And I know Patient Zero is definitely wants to have more games streamed online, and you know what he's hoping what he wants to do is what X-Wing, you know, that I mentioned, I think it was last week where I mentioned it. That, you know, had the commentators for this X-Wing tournament game that was being played at some convention, and they were doing a commentating on that. And obviously, I could possibly do the same thing with some of the online games that are playing right now as part of, you know, that Sapphire Star tournaments. Now, the tough part about that one overall is that one, I'd have to be whoever's going to be a commentator, whether it's me or somebody else online, would have to be online at that moment in time, and the players would actually have to announce their games beforehand so that when it was streamed, you know, we actually have a live access stream. Obviously, one thing that also can be done is recording it too, so that later on it can be played back and it can be posted up to YouTube and have it so other people can actually watch it even when they're not available to watch it live, you know. So, because it is, in my mind anyway, the online client is good if it's not as clunky if you're not playing it, as in you're watching it versus playing it. Playing it, it gets clunky, but I'm not sure how to solve it. You know, I don't have a lot of experience with user experience, you know, UX, you know, user interface, user experience. I got some ideas. Whether they work or not, and of course, then it takes a lot of work to get done on. Obviously, with the Starfleet Warlord, I have been able to concentrate on that and get the new website up and running, so I can be able to drop the old website, which is a great thing. Actually, at this point, I need to shut down the server because it's costing me money. And which would be great because that means one less server I have to have running and cuts back on my costs. You know, because currently, 1, 2, 3. Yeah, right now I have 3 servers that I have, 3 actual VMs. The one server supports 2 different websites, and then I have another server which supports 4 websites. Because when you have a static web page, there's not much to do. As long as you can post the web pages up on the website, you know, most small VM, oops, ouch. Most, can you stop that? And most small websites, you know, small VMs, you know, I think they call them VPS, virtual something servers. But anyway, it costs me $5 a month to run. And if you're in your bandwidth cost, if you're not that big of a website, i.e. you're not going to get millions of hits a month, then, you know, $5 a month is cheap, especially if you already have either you do the website yourself, or like SFU on Call currently does, which it uses RapidWeaver to generate the website. Now, as I mentioned last week, it's kind of expensive. And I'm planning on moving over to a static generator. And because it's not that complicated, i.e., it's not that big of the website doesn't have a lot of interactive pieces. You know, the biggest issue for me when it comes to Starfleet Warlord was some of the interactive pieces that you actually had to develop the JavaScript, you had to develop the back end and so forth. It had to change it to be a different kind of back end and so forth. But it worked. You know, there was some work involved, but now I can easily just use a static generator to do most of the stuff, and anything that is interactive, I can do relatively quickly with JavaScript. And I said, and some of the backend stuff, which is for like PayPal interactions and also sending out emails when it comes to, you know, initial builds, you know, simple things like that, you know, I can do. I got it done. It works great now. A lot less infrastructure that's required to run that server versus my previous server. So also in the case of Starfleet Warlord, it needed an update, you know, just like SFB Online at this point in time. Yeah, it needs an update. Now, what could I do? When it comes to updating the website, don't know. As it took me a while of time to get to where I am now, where I took the old website and I made it a little more interactive with menus and things like that, to make it more modern in that case. Now, as I pointed out a couple times or multiple times already, which is if you look at the actual HTML code, it's pretty freaking bloody ugly. I know. But it works, you know, and it produces a good result, you know, and that I think that's all that matters. Anyhow, I think with that, I think I'm going to wrap up for this evening. Doug, it's always a pleasure to have you around.
Yay, thanks for having me on again.
Okay. Well, you have a good night. Bye sometime. Okay. Okay.
Thank you.
So, had a nice little chat there about the tournaments, both regular tournament play, electronic warfare tournament play. What a idea of that. And, of course, some SFB and FedCom trying to think through some of those issues there. And hopefully, I'll get some time to actually work on the online client, possibly even this upcoming end of the month where I have a week off of my day job, so I actually can focus on other things, and I'll just have to wait and see. So with that, I am Paul Franz, and I bid you a good night.